ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय वाहं तमो महदहं खखचरं
निर्भूसंवेष्टितांडगतसप्तवितस्तिकाया
क्वेद्रिग्विदाविगणितांडपरानुचर्या वाथाद्वरोम विवरस्य च ते महित्वम् What am I, a small creature measuring seven spans of my own hand? I am enclosed in a pot-like universe composed of material nature, the total material energy, false ego, ether, air, water, and earth. And what is your glory? Unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body just as particles of dust pass through the openings of a screened window. Purport. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 5, Text 72, Srila Prabhupada gives the following purport for this verse. When Lord Brahma, after having stolen all Krishna's cows and cowherd boys, returned and saw that the cows and boys were still roaming with Krishna, he offered this prayer in his defeat. A conditioned soul, even one so great as Brahma, who managed the affairs of the entire universe, cannot compare to the personality of Godhead. For he can produce numberless universes simply by the spiritual rays emanating from the pores of his body. Material scientists should take lessons from the utterances of Sri Brahma regarding our insignificance in comparison to God. In these prayers of Brahma, there is much to learn for those who are falsely puffed up by the accumulation of power. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Volume 1, Chapter 14, Srila Prabhupada further comments on this verse. Lord Brahma realized his actual position. He is certainly the supreme teacher of this universe, in charge of the production of material nature, which consists of the complete material elements, false ego, sky, air, fire, water, and earth. Such a universe may be gigantic, but it can be measured, just as we measure our own body as seven spans. Generally, everyone's personal bodily measurement is calculated to be seven spans of his hand. This particular universe may appear to be a very gigantic body, but is nothing but the measurement of seven spans for Lord Brahma. Aside from this universe, there are unlimited other universes outside the jurisdiction of this particular Lord Brahma. Just as innumerable atomic infinitesimal fragments pass through the holes of a screened window, so millions and trillions of universes in their seedling form are coming out from the bodily pores of Mahavishnu. And that Mahavishnu is but a part of the plenary expansion of Krishna. Under these circumstances, although Lord Brahma is the supreme creature within this universe, what is his importance in the presence of Krishna? Today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, entitled Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna, Text 11. The Srimad Bhagavatam, the Mahapurana, the greatest of all literatures, the Amala Purana, which is completely pure, reveals lessons to humanity in a most powerful and convincing way. In some Vedas, Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Varuna, they are praised as God, worshipped. And taking all that into consideration, these most powerful personalities in the entire universe, not a single one of them can any human possibly compare to, as far as wealth, power, knowledge, whoever we are. A great yogi in this world may be able to produce some gold, may be able to travel from Badrikashram in the Himalayas by chanting mantra to Prayag in a matter of seconds under the water of the Ganga. May be able to read minds, may be able to make curses and kill people. But what is such a person compared to Indra? Do they have control over the Samvataka clouds that devastate the entire universe? Or Brahma, who could be the grandfather of every living being within the universe, with such a lifespan? So these great devas, they supply us all the necessities of life. They provide the earth, the rain, the fire. And therefore, Vedic literatures teach that we should be grateful. There's no possibility of any real spirituality unless we're grateful, unless we humble ourselves before superior people. This is fundamental, basic. Otherwise, so-called religion, spirituality, whatever we may call it, it's all just an external, mundane exercise. Unless it teaches us how to be humble and grateful. So the Vedic literatures teach us to be humble and grateful toward all the gifts we receive in every aspect of our life.
Devarshi Putaptini Nam Pitrinam. But then we learn that if we worship Krishna, we have fulfilled the obligation of worshiping every one of the devas, all of our ancestors, forefathers, and anyone else who has ever provided anything for us. Just like watering the root of the tree. You see, when you water the root of the tree, it's not that you're neglecting everyone else. Sometimes devotees have this misconception. I do not have to respect anyone if I worship Krishna. But then that mentality is not worshiping Krishna really at all. Amanina manadena. If we're worshiping Krishna properly, we offer our respects to every living being. And that's actually what it means. When you water the root of the tree, naturally, the water goes to every leaf, branch, twig, flower, and leaf. So similarly, if we actually serve Krishna, if we actually develop love for Krishna, then our love, our respect, our attitude of service will naturally extend to every living being. It doesn't negate every living being. It includes every living being. But if we don't water the root of the tree, then we're not really doing much of anything for any flower or leaf or branch. We can pour water on them, but it's external, it's superficial. It cannot reach the soul. We cannot reach the soul, the heart of anyone, unless we access Krishna. When we worship Krishna, our worship satisfies all the demigods, all the forefathers, all living beings. And to graphically, in the most extreme case where there's no possible room for loopholes or justifications, Krishna teaches the lessons through the topmost powerful personalities. In this case, to humble ourselves. You see, if you humble yourself before God, you're humble before everyone. Because you're humble. It's not that I'm humble before God, but I'm an egomaniac in front of anybody else. It's not possible. That means it's just a superficial exercise of humbling yourself before God. If you humble before God, that means you're actually humble, truly, genuinely humble. And therefore, you'll be humble in every situation. Humility doesn't mean weak. Humility doesn't mean cowardly. Actual humility is the most powerful strength because it accesses God's power. But it means nothing is mine. I am small. And if we're actually humble, then we will accept God's will above our own will. We can offer so many dandavats to everybody, but if we're still attached to my way, then we're still ego. What is God's way? What is Krishna's way? That's humility. What is your wish? So we have found, well, here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, in this chapter, we're hearing Brahma's prayers. In future chapters, we're going to see how Indra is totally humbled. in the Govardhan Puja Leela, and he offers prayers. Later on, we're going to find this battle between Shiva and Krishna, and Shiva is totally humbled, and Krishna really humbled him. We read in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's explanations in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, where after Shiva surrenders, Krishna said, there is no one that hates me more than you. Can you imagine saying that? That really humbled Shiva. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. And then Krishna said, I'm only saying these things because I have to teach a good lesson to the world through you. And Varuna, the sea, most of the earth is covered by the seas. He's very powerful. If a tsunami comes from the sea, what are you going to do? Are you going to shoot a nuclear bomb against it? It'll only make it worse. Are you going to have your computer and the finest software to try to delete it? Doesn't work. There's nothing you can do. The sea is very powerful. If the sea wants to, at a certain point, you know, the people are very much concerned with global warming that the sea could cover. New York City, Los Angeles, Bombay will be converted to just a bay. Unless it's bombed first. So Krishna's, Varuna is offering prayers to Krishna. So here we have the most powerful of all living beings, Lord Brahma. And such a graphic contrast between the opulence of Brahma in Brahma Loka and the Aishwarya, the opulences that he is constantly manifesting. And little Gopal, he was still in his Kumar Leela, he's taking care of the calves. When he enters his Poganda Leela, he gets the cows. So that means he's not even 5-6 years old. And he's playing with the boys. They go to the pastures. They get little stones. And they throw them at the fruits of the tree. And if they hit the fruit falls. And then they share it with each other and eat it. Why does Krishna have to throw a stone to get a fruit? This is his leela. He's just playing just like an ordinary boy. And he's wrestling and dancing and singing with his friends, and they are doing the same for him. Krishna will dance like a peacock, and all his friends will clap. And then they will dance like peacocks, and Krishna and Balaram will clap. And this way they're simply equals. And Brahma, after Agasura was liberated, he sees Krishna and the Gopas sitting and taking prasad together on the bank of Yamuna. And one boy is saying, Krishna, this is so nice. My mother made it. And he takes it and bite out of it and chews it, and he's, oh,
this is so nice, Krishna, you must try some. And Krishna is very hungry, very eager to take food right out of the mouth of these little cowherd boys. Great, great Brahmins are performing yajñas and offering. The flames of the yajña are like the tongue of the Lord. And with mantras and with precision ritual, they are making offerings. And Krishna is just grabbing food out of his devotees' mouths. And one boy says, Krishna, open your mouth and close your eyes. Krishna opens his mouth and closes his eyes. And one of the boys takes a samosa that his mother makes and empties out the filling and fills it with flowers. And Krishna eats it. And flowers are not very nice to taste. So he makes a very disgusted kind of look. And everybody claps and laughs that, look what I did to Krishna. And sometimes they chase each other. Why did you do this to me? So this is Vrindavan. So Brahma is seeing this. How did he kill Bhagasura? He knows he's God, but Krishna's childlike pastimes were so ordinary and so sweet that even Brahma became overcome in thinking, how could he be God if he's doing these things? He's just a child. But he is God, but at the same time. So he decided to manifest his own opulences before Krishna. Taking away all the calves and the little boys. And we have discussed in previous classes how for Krishna it was just another lila. Just by his desire, he expanded himself instantly of every boy and every calf. There were unlimited cows and calves. Calves and boys. And each one was an exact replica. So identical that even the mother cows and the mother father of the children didn't have the slightest suspicion that there was anything wrong or different for one full year. Quite incredible. The only difference was they never loved their children so much. And they were very curious about that. Why is it that we love our children just like we love Krishna? But they never suspected that it could be anyone but their children. And then when they went out to play, even when the parents weren't around, they played with each other with exactly the same relationships as they always had. This is thorough. And Brahma comes back a year later and he sees everything's exactly the same. And he became totally bewildered. He was going to see where these children were that were sleeping. They were there, but they were here. They were there, but they were here. Why? How? Krishna then manifested every little calf as Vishnu Narayan. And every cowherd boy became Vishnu. Now for Brahma, there is one Vishnu who is the absolute supreme, one God of all gods. And Brahma worships Vishnu as the one God. And here he's seeing hundreds and thousands of Vishnus.
all absolutely identical with each other. And he sees each calf as Vishnu. Each little boy is Vishnu. But Krishna didn't just leave it like that. He saw all the demigods and all the sages and all the rishis around each Vishnu, worshiping and offering prayers. Now for Brahma, it takes a lot to impress him. You know, if you give a billionaire a gift of 50 rupees, it's not very impressive. There's not much that any of us could do to impress Lord Brahma. Yes? What? Are we going to show him how strong we are? Are we going to show him how intelligent we are? Are we going to I saw in news that a few days ago, the oldest person on earth died. Just a couple days ago. The oldest person in the planet. She was 116 years old. It's impressive, isn't it? Living 116 years. And she said she owes her life to a good diet and clean living. But do you think Brahma's impressed by that? He lives 311 trillion years. And in 311 trillion years, he never gets sick once. Never even gets a cold. Can you imagine? Never has to see a doctor. Doesn't have to watch his diet. Doesn't have to go to the gym and do exercises. He is in perfect health from his birth until he goes back to Godhead. So what can we do to impress Brahma? We could memorize verses. Brahma's the origin of all Vedas, and he doesn't write anything down. He knows all the Vedas by memory. But this little cowherd boy, he really impressed Brahma. When he manifested these Vishnus, because this is what you have to do to Brahma. Brahma was not only impressed, he was totally bewildered. He couldn't say a word. He forgot who he was. He forgot where he was. He forgot why he was. He lost the power to even blink his eyes. He just stood there. Completely conquered. And suddenly all the Vishnus disappear and little Gopal, just exactly as he was exactly 1 year before he played his Leela on Brahma, he still had that little lump of food in his hand, and he was innocently looking, where is my calves? Where is my friends? And for Brahma, this is supernatural, because it was the same lump of food. And it was dahi. Dahi, rice, and fruit. Yes? Now, how long without refrigeration even with refrigeration, what to speak without refrigeration, how long does dahi and fruit remain fresh? It was in Krishna's hand for 1 year. And it was absolutely fresh. That in itself would bewilder Brahma. What to speak of everything else he had just saw. At that point, Brahma totally humbled himself because he recognized Krishna is everything and I am nothing. Just like there's that famous story of one of our most powerful, influential leaders of our society. He was with Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, he gave a nice analogy. He said, in the cosmic manifestation, there are unlimited universes. And within this universe, there are so many countries. And this is just a tiny, insignificant universe in the cosmic manifestation. And this country of America is a tiny little place compared to the universe, this Earth planet. And within the Earth planet, tiny little place. And within the United States of America, Los Angeles is just a little place. Within Los Angeles, this house that we're living in, this temple, is just an insignificant place. And you, just one little devotee, is just a little tiny person in this house, and you think that you are the Lord. You are insignificant. Now, you can't use that analogy with Lord Brahma. We are really insignificant compared to Brahma. But Lord Brahma, he was watching Krishna. He saw the Agasura. He saw Vrindavan. He stole all the kids from Vrindavan, all the calves. But he never saw Vrindavan. He was seeing, but not seeing. After he totally humbled himself, no false ego, then suddenly he saw Vrindavan. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. Unless our eyes are anointed with the salve of love, we cannot see Krishna. We cannot see what is Vrindavan. There is seeing and there's actual seeing. Because we cannot see Vrindavan with our eyes. We can only see Vrindavan through the love of our hearts. So even Brahma, the original guru and father of the whole universe, as long as he had this ego, he was right there in Vrindavan, but he couldn't see it. It was only after he was totally smashed, totally bewildered, totally humbled, that he could see, what are these trees? They're Kalpavriksha trees. What is this river Yamuna? It's a stream of flowing prema bhakti descending from the spiritual world. What are these blades of grass? They're eternally liberated, divine lovers of God. What are these cows? They're kamadhenus. They could fulfill every wish of every heart. He was seeing every atomic particle of Vrindavan.
as unlimitedly, invaluably sacred. But it wasn't until every drop of his ahankar or ego was transcended. So it's at this state that Brahma begins his prayers. He comes down off of his swan carrier and offers his full prostrations, dandavats, with his crowns at the feet of little Gopal. And Gopal's not even paying attention to him. He's holding his little Krishna surprise prasad and looking around, where's my friend? Who's this? And Chaitanya Charitamrita describes a similar situation in Dwarka, where Lord Brahma comes to visit Krishna. And the gatekeeper asks, you know, yes? He says, I want to see Krishna. Tell him that Brahma has come. So the gatekeeper goes in and comes out and says, Krishna wants to know which Brahma.
And this was shocking for Brahma. He said, tell him the Brahma with four heads. Because nobody else has four heads in this universe.
So Krishna keeps him waiting. Then the person comes out. He says, oh, okay, four-headed Brahma, you could come in. But in the meanwhile, Krishna invited other Brahmas. So when four-headed Brahma came in, he saw an eight-headed Brahma, a 16-headed Brahma, a 32-headed Brahma, a 64-headed Brahma, a 128-headed Brahma. He saw Brahmins with hundreds of heads, thousands of heads, and millions of heads. Now you may think, you know, these must be some kind of freaks. You know? How do you get around with a million heads in one body? You know, one body with a million heads. Would you like to be like that? You're thinking it must be very ugly and strange and weird and deformed. But actually, this is Krishna's creation. His million heads means he's a million times more beautiful and more wonderful than any of us. He's constructed in such a way that it's absolutely beautiful. You see, everything's relative. It's just like if you have a forest with a million beautiful flowering kadamba trees, that's better than even one, isn't it? So Krishna creates in such a way that he's absolutely beautiful. And once you see a Brahma with a million heads, then if somebody just has four, you think, God, who's that? So Brahma, when he saw all these things, he felt like he was a mosquito in a herd of elephants. And then Krishna told all the other Brahmas, yes, thank you for your reports. Now go back to your respective universes. And only this one Brahma remained, our Brahma. And then he had the proper understanding of Krishna, because all of them were all offering their prayers and giving their reports to Krishna.
So Brahma begins his prayers by speaking about Krishna's beautiful little form as a cowherd boy. Ishwara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha Anadira Dira Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. This is composed by Brahma. Krishna, your form is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. You are the Parameshwara. I'm an Ishwara, so many Ishwaras, but you are the supreme controller of all controllers. You're the cause of all causes. You're the source of everything. And this, now I'm understanding who you are. This beautiful form of yours, which is dark like a monsoon rain cloud. You have a little stick for herding cows and a flute for entertaining your devotees. And you have a little peacock feather in your hairs. This beautiful form of yours is the source of all that exists. Now I understand. And he continues on by telling how your garment is brilliant like lightning. The beauty of your face is enhanced by your gunja earrings. And wearing beautiful forest flower garlands. Now gunja is just a simple little seed. You have all seen. It grows in Vrindavan. It's usually red and white, sometimes blackish. There's little seeds. And if somebody were just walking around compared to other things, it wouldn't be so beautiful. But the gopis love to make, and the gopas also, when they're in the castra grounds, they make little garlands of these gunja seeds, these buds. And when they're on Krishna, they're unlimitedly beautiful. And they are very dear to Krishna because they're offered by his cowherd boys. And Brahma, he tells how there is no possibility of understanding this form of Krishna, who Krishna really is, even by the most profound, deep study of all Vedas, of logic, of philosophy, even the greatest scholars, because Krishna is achintya. He is inconceivable. He's beyond the reach of any material resource that we have. We must use our intelligence. We must use our mind. We must use our skills in order to understand Krishna and facilitate to serve Krishna. But Krishna is unlimitedly beyond. How can we understand? Even Brahma says, through this process of speculative knowledge, of research, no one ever can reach the end of who Krishna is. It's only possible through bhakti. He explains through tapasya, through cultivation of knowledge, one can, on very rare occasions, understand the impersonal energy that is emanating from you. But to understand you as you are, it's only by your grace. And that grace comes in reciprocation to devotional service or bhakti. Krishna says the same thing in Gita. Bhakti. bhaktya tvana niyashakya aham evam vidurjana. It's only by bhakti that I can be understood as I am standing before you. Because Krishna is unlimited. The limited can never understand the unlimited by its own resources or powers. But the unlimited can reveal himself unlimitedly to the limited by his unlimited potency. I'll try to repeat that. The limited has no capacity to accommodate the unlimited. Yes? It's like, can you put all the water in the Arabian Sea in a teaspoon? What do you say? How much water can fit in a teaspoon? At one time, a teaspoon, that's its capacity. You know, there may be many little teaspoons, you know, among each other, and one has 2 drops of water, and one has 3 drops of water, and one has 4 drops, and one is saying, look at me, I have 4 drops, you only have 1 drop. Yes. And another says, I have 6 drops. See how full I am. And another teaspoon, you know, has maybe 108 drops and he's completely full and everybody's like, all the other teaspoons are envious of him. Some are accepting him as their guru. Or he must be God. But what is the capacity of a teaspoon to accommodate the entire Arabian Sea? Impossible. So similarly, what is our capacity with our little human intelligence, even the demigod of Brahma's intelligence, compared to Krishna? Brahma's powers and intelligence are not much different than ours. Compared to Krishna, Brahma's powers or intelligence is not much different than an ant. We think we're great compared to ants. Yes. But Brahma's like an ant, comes to Krishna. So the limited can never comprehend the unlimited. It's beyond our scope. Infinitely behind our scope. But the quality of the unlimited can fully reveal himself to the limited. In this case, not only the Arabian Sea, but the Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, the Indian Ocean, the Arctic Ocean, the ocean of milk, the ocean of liquor, the ocean of sugarcane juice. Yeah. The ocean of ghee, all the oceans can fully fit in that teaspoon. That's what Achintya Shakti means. That's Krishna. So this is Brahma's realization, that unless, if Krishna reveals himself to us, to anyone, then we can understand Krishna in full. But it's not by how many rounds of japa we perform. It's not by how many times we have read through Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not by how many people we have converted to Krishna consciousness. It's not by how many people like our lectures, or our or how many CDs we sell. It's not by how much money we make.
It's not by how much money we donate. It's not by my austerities, how many years I've been following the regulative principles. It's not by how many praises I get from my own wife. It has nothing to do. These are only ways of somehow or other trying to please Krishna, some siddhir haritoshanam. If Krishna is pleased, Krishna reveals himself to us. In Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, we read about this little girl. She's only 4 years old. She's just sitting in the corner, minding her own business. And Lord Chaitanya turns to her in front of all these great Paramahamsa Mahabhagavat Acharyas. He turns to this little girl. And he says, Narayani, chant Krishna's name and cry in ecstasy. So she went, Krishna. Krishna! Torrents of tears were flowing from her eyes. Her hairs were standing on end. Her limbs were trembling. She fell to the ground in total ecstatic love of God, rolling on the ground, chanting Krishna's name constantly. And all of these great Vaishnavas, they understood this is the ultimate perfection of life. What was her qualification? She didn't know any slokas. She wasn't a sadhaka. She never went to school yet. The Lord gave mercy. So this is where this verse is very important. Trinadapi sunichena taror ibasihishnana amani namanadena kirtaniya sadhari. Yes, we must chant our rounds. We must study Srimad Bhagavatam. We must offer what we have to Krishna. If we don't do that, then there's no sincerity in our efforts. But unless it is done with the type of humility that Brahma is speaking about, it's not going to please Krishna. And we can do it birth after birth after birth and never get Krishna. And after describing how only bhakti can bring us to Krishna consciousness, Lord Brahma, he explains how his realization, even if the greatest scientists of the world, or even the great demigods, if you're able to count every atom in the entire Earth planet. Who could do that? Not just guess. Who could even guess? How many atoms are there on the Earth planet and in the Earth planet? Even if you could actually have an authoritative number, counting every single atom in the earth. Even if you can understand every single snowflake that has ever fallen on earth. Now, Himalaya means the abode of snow. I'm from Chicago. In the wintertime, all you see is snow. In March of this year, April in India, this year earlier, I was here and it was just coming toward the end of March, just beginning of April, and it was so hot in India, so hot. Very intensely hot. And I was supposed to go on this tour of the Journey Home book in Moscow. So very in the heat, I was thinking, Moscow will be very refreshingly cool. So I was going for service, not for the cool. But it's our nature. Sometimes, even when we're going for service, you know, we'll take advantage of the coolness. As long as it's there, I might as well be happy. Yes. So I went. And to get there was not easy. But when I did arrive, it was this deep of snow everywhere. And it was freezing cold. So freezing cold. You remember? This is April. And Shyamasundara Prabhu, who's here, he was in California. And these cellular phones, my God, they do so many things. He was sitting in a beautiful, sunny spring day in California. And there was a peacock with his feathers opened, and he took a photo and sent it to me by phone. He had no idea where I was. Do you remember? It's a sunny day with flowering trees and a beautiful peacock smiling in the sunlight, and he said, I just wanted to share with you where I am. Southern California. And he didn't know where I was. So I just was inside at the time, and I went out the window, I took a photo and sent it to him. It was total snow. And all the cars were buried in snow. And I sent it to him. I said, I just wanted to share with you where I am. To help him appreciate where he was. And then Bhaktivedyan Goswami Maharaj, who's with us today, we had programs in Moscow. It was snowing the whole time, and there was snow everywhere. And then we decided to go to St. Petersburg. We took a train, and from Moscow all the way to St. Petersburg, all we saw was everything was just snow, as far as the eyes could see in the Russian countryside. Just snow, snow, and snow. Now, in America, when it's freezing and icy and snow just pouring down, it was really heavy snow. To go to hear a Swami speak, people will just stay home. But every event was completely filled with people. And they're all not devotees, yes? Probably in some of these events, 80%, 90% were just common people, not devotees. But when they want to go somewhere, you know, the ice, the snow, the blizzards, the freezing cold, they just... I was thinking, these people are very special. But to get back to the Srimad Bhagavatam class... Everything's relative. Brahma says every atom on earth, every flake of snow, even if you can count that, even if you can count every molecular particle on every ray emanating from the sun, You can count all those things, but still, it's impossible to count the unlimited divine qualities of Krishna. I'll read it specifically. In time, learned philosophers and scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth, the particles of snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars and other luminaries. But among these learned men, who could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have descended onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living entities? You see, impersonal philosophers, because everything in this world is so limited and everything is subjected to deterioration and annihilation, they think for the absolute truth to be unlimited, the absolute truth must have no qualities. Nirguna. No qualities whatsoever. That's unlimited. But Brahma, he's saying that that type of analysis is simply mental speculation. Now that he has humbled himself and actually it has been revealed to him by Krishna's grace, he's explaining that Krishna has unlimited qualities. Unlimited doesn't mean no qualities. Unlimited means unlimited qualities. If you multiply by hundreds of trillions, the sum total of all the stars, all the snowflakes, all the atoms on earth, and all the molecular particles from the sunshine, add them all together and multiply it by quadrillions of quadrillions, and it doesn't add up to even a fraction of Krishna's unlimited qualities. Now we may say that is impossible. This is some sort of poetic, spiritual stuff. But that's Krishna. He's achintya. He's inconceivable. And the most inconceivable potency of Krishna is his ladini shakti, his pleasure potency. Because that pleasure potency conquers him. And Brahma goes on to explain that although Krishna is so great, he agrees to become subordinate, controlled, and conquered by the love of his devotee. This little infinitesimal jiva, this little part and parcel of Krishna that's you and me, when it is purified through devotion, and when that Ananda Shakti awakens within our heart by Radha's grace, then Krishna is conquered by that love. How could Mother Yashoda put a rope around him? How could the little cowherd boys defeat him in wrestling? How could Krishna tell the gopis that even in the entire lifespan of Brahma, I can never repay you for your love for me? That's Krishna. That's Vrindavan. This is what Brahma's beginning to understand. And Brahma tells, Tatena kampam susamikshamano bunjana ivatmakritam vipakam. Ridvagvapurvir vidadam namaste jivetiya mukti pade sadaya bhak. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while
patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Srila Prabhupada quoted this verse very often because it's so relevant to each and every one of us. In this world, dukkhalayam ashashvatam, there will be tribulation, reversals, sufferings. Whether you're a devotee or whether you're not a devotee, those things do not change. Not much. Being a devotee means you transcend it. Being a devotee doesn't mean, now I will not grow old. Now I will not get diseased. Now I will not die. That's true about the soul. But the soul's always like that. But it doesn't mean your body is going to become some immortal deity. Everything in matter. Even Brahma dies eventually. So devotional service means we transcend the dualities of material existence. We realize the immortality of the soul. And we realize the love of Krishna in every aspect of our life. But in the process, the way to actually achieve Krishna's grace is so beautifully explained in this verse. That with a heart of gratitude, love, and respect, we go on serving Krishna. Whatever happens. Tamstitikshashvabharata. We tolerate all these inconveniences. And we also tolerate the conveniences. A devotee tolerates pleasure. Because pleasure can really divert our attention away from Krishna. And a devotee tolerates pain. Because pain could easily divert our attention away from Krishna. Just a few days ago, a wonderful devotee passed from this world. He was the son of one of my god sisters. In Italy, there's a lady named Chitra Rupini Devi, one of Srila Prabhupada's very dear disciples. And what a wonderful devotee she is. Loves to serve, always humble, offers respects to everyone. And she was a single mother, raising her child. Perfectly chaste, faithful, even despite, you know, just having to raise one child all alone. And how she raised this child. Her one and only. Her example inspired him in such a way. He was born a devotee, and when he became a teenager, when most teenagers are very enthusiastic about discovering the inner secrets of material nature, they go into the society of being cool, not like in Moscow, but being cool by just making the scene and being able to attract the opposite sex and enjoying. When he was just about 16 years old, 17 years old, didn't want anything but to serve. He was chanting 16 rounds every day, minimal. eager to serve devotees, eager to serve everyone. He was just the pride and joy of his mother, you can imagine. He was incredible. You know, Maya just was tempting him as much as anyone else, but he just turned his head around and said, I want Krishna. So loving, so devotional. And when he was about 20, he got cancer. Some kind of lymph cancer. And the poor boy, 20 years old, wonderful devotee, very pure devotee, never making any offenses to anyone, loves to chant, loves to dance, loves to serve, loves to associate. And he went through 6 months. Is chemotherapy 6 months or 1 year? He went through 1 year of chemotherapy. The entire, and they tested him, and he still had the cancer. So the doctor said, you have to go through another year with double dose. He went through that. You know how much suffering, how debilitating that is? Still didn't work. And his mother was so much trying to help him. All she had. So the doctor said, the only possibility is we have to transplant bone marrow from somebody into him. So she volunteered it herself. I imagine it's quite painful. She did the whole surgery and she donated her bone marrow for him. But through all this, through both treatments of chemotherapy, through the surgeries, through all these other different ways they were trying, whenever I would come to Italy, he would always come to see me without doubt. And he was always just offering his... And nobody ever heard him complain. The only complaint was, I want to serve. I have no strength to serve. I'm not able to concentrate on my chanting my rounds. I'm not able to help the devotees. You know, Rath Yatra's coming and they need so much help and I can't help. That was his only complaint. And it wasn't even a complaint. He was just feeling such separation from service. It wasn't about the pain. It wasn't about maybe I'll die. It's just about, I want to serve so bad. Just a few days ago, his mother called and told me that he was at very last stages. So I spoke to him on the phone and I chanted for him. And devotees gathered around him and were having little kirtan and his mother was praying. And he passed from the world. Devotees may ask, why did it happen to him? All these teenagers who are, you know, getting intoxicated and doing all kinds of other things that, you know, they're healthy and strong and living long. Why this happened to him? Of course, people like that also get cancer and go through it. We had the same discussions when those 8 wonderful, loving devotees left us at that plane crash in the Himalayas earlier this year. The nature of material existence is whoever we are. There's going to be sufferings, there's going to be obstacles, because that's the nature of the material body. Especially on this Earth planet. But here Lord Brahma is telling us, and this boy Madhavananda Prabhu, he very much exemplified this verse. He passed away, he was only 22 years old. That Krishna, even when, Brahma is saying, even when all sorts of sufferings and difficulties come upon us, if we're able, with a grateful and humble heart and folded hands, say, Krishna, thank you. I'm yours. If you do that, you will go back to Godhead. You will attain the supreme perfection of liberation. Going back to Godhead. If you can't do that, then you're likely to keep coming back until you can. So Brahma, he's an authority. He was an authority before he had this darshan of Krishna, but now he's in his peak of wisdom. And he's giving us this verse. It's not about how much you accomplish on the worldly level. It's not about how much you know. It's not about how good your body is. Even if you can do every single asana in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras expertly. Or you could stand on one finger with your feet going backward, covering your eyes. Without moving and without breathing for 108 days. Still, you can't go back to Godhead by doing that. But if when the challenges and struggles and anything else that come in life, if you just continue to chant the holy names, continue to offer your prayers with a respectful, humble, and grateful heart, then you will go back to Godhead. Brahma says, then he starts my Lord, just see my uncivilized impudence. This is pretty incredible. Now Brahma's a liberated soul. He's actually seeing Vrindavan as it is. He's seeing Krishna as he is. He's received the grace of the Lord. And he's not talking about what a great devotee he is. He's talking about what an impudent, uncivilized person he is. And he's begging to be excused for his offenses. I have taken birth in the mode of passion, and I'm therefore simply foolish, presuming myself a controller independent of your lordship. My eyes are blinded by the darkness of ignorance, which it causes me to think of myself as the unborn creator of the universe. But please consider that I am your servant and therefore worthy of your compassion. Such a birth of Brahma. Sometimes people ask, who was your mother? How many have been asked that question? Who is your father?
Well, when they asked Brahma that question, how many of you could say, I was born on a fragrant, beautiful, thousand-petal lotus flower that sprouted from the navel of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu? That's quite sensationalistic. That's Brahma's birth. But after this incident, where because of his high birth and his power and his influence, all the demigods honor Brahma. And nobody could steal his post. He is Brahma for the whole universe. As long as this universe exists, there's the same Brahma. Yes? He doesn't have to campaign for votes every 4 years, even every four kalpas. Secure such a person. But Lord Brahma, he prayed to Krishna that I want to be born in an untouchable family where people will persecute me and ridicule me. Then I'll really be able to chant your name. So Lord Krishna fulfilled his desire. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya appeared to Brahma and said, in Antardweep, he knew Lord Chaitanya would be coming, but he knew how he made mistakes to Krishna because of his powerful position. So he did tapasya. When Lord Chaitanya appeared, he said, I don't want to have any pride. So the Lord said, all right, you will be an untouchable. And you will be persecuted and ridiculed and misunderstood in every aspect of your life. But in that state, you will always be humbly chanting my names. And Lord Brahma came as Haridas Thakur. While materialistic people condemned him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Chaitanya, he would say, I am touching you for my purification. Your birth is better than mine. And when Haridas passed away, Lord Chaitanya danced with his body. And with tears in his eyes, he declared, the crown jewel of the whole universe has left us. This is to the extent that this kind of humility and devotion affects Krishna. Is there any questions? Yes, Sridhama Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, thank you very much for the wonderful class, Maharaj. Maharaj, just one serious concern that comes to my mind every time I hear such amazing stories about devotees behaving in most devotional ways in their very difficult situations. What I find very difficult to understand is that the devotee has gone through his situations and he has passed away in a glorious way, going back to Krishna. But the people who remain back, they really suffer. So how does somebody who we really don't honor the people who stay back because they are really suffering, the people who when they have gone back to the higher realms. So how do people like was staying back and was suffering there, I would say, use the word separation from these people who have left. How do we this situation? Because for them it is a very cruel situation. Even though the person is glorified, but it appears to be very cruel.
The principle of this verse applies to every type of suffering in this world. It may be the suffering of our own body and mind. It may be the suffering of the loss of loved ones. And in this case, Chittarupini Devi, she's not complaining. She did everything. She dedicated the last 3 years, 24 hours a day, to try to help her child. It's, for her, it's on our level of humans. It's like Sachimata when Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. He was gone. But she's just taking it in such Krishna, she's responding with such Krishna consciousness. Just grateful for the whatever service she had to such a wonderful soul who appeared as her son. And the pain is intense, the separation, the motherly affection. But her gratitude for Krishna, her sincerity in taking shelter of the holy name is not being distracted by these things. And Madhavananda Prabhu, he had his challenges to maintain the integrity of this verse. And his mother is having her challenges to maintain the integrity of this verse. And each and every one of us as devotees have our own challenges to maintain the integrity of this verse. And to have sympathy to help each other to maintain that integrity is a very sacred and essential aspect of our own Krishna consciousness. What does it mean to be the servant of the servant of the servant? It means to be there for each, that our service to each other is intact even through the various challenges and crises that inevitably come. But oftentimes, it's the nice things of this world that distract us even more. Temptations, opportunities for power, for pleasure, for mystic perfections. So these dualities, we remain very, very steady and dedicated to our spiritual practice and to the integrity of service, whatever may come. Honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, health, disease, success, failure. We just carry on with grateful hearts chanting Hare Krishna and serving each other. That's the path of perfection. And according to Brahma, that's the only path of perfection. Does that answer your question? Yes,
So Shyamasundara Prabhu, would you like to... Shyamasundara Prabhu has a special assignment for every one of us. And he is now going to explain what it is.
Hare Krishna. Well, you all may remember last year our visit from Marjorie and Joe Walsh. How many were here? Was everyone here that when Joe and Marjorie came? Do you remember them finally? Okay. Well, I wanted to make a little 2 or 3 minute film, a little video, all of us greeting Joe and Marjorie so I can send it to them. Is that all right? Okay. Okay. I'll start out with a little intro and then put it on you. You say something. And then... Okay. And then I'll turn the camera off. Maybe we'll practice it, but I want everybody to go, "Hi, Marjorie!" And then, "Hi, Joe!" And then we'll chant loudly Hare Krishna to them 3 times. It's very simple. Okay. Let's practice it once. "Hi, Marjorie." Okay?
"Hi!"
Great. Now, "Hi, Joe."
"Hi, Joe!"
Okay. I don't think we need to...
More practice.
Huh?
More practice.
Okay. It wasn't loud enough. All right, let's do it again. "Hi, Marjorie," okay?
"Hi, Marjorie!"
Great.
This is not on internet or anything, right? Well, just to tell you why he's doing this is because Marjorie has cancer, and she's being treated, and she's struggling, so out of compassion, Shyamasundara is... But she doesn't want people to know, so don't tell anyone I said this.
Do it again.
Okay, let's do it again. But anybody know about video?
Just use this one. Come, bring it over here. Does that record?
Why not just record it on that one? If we record this on your camera, can you give me a copy of that?
Yes, yes.
By tonight? Yes. I'm leaving tonight. Okay, let's just do that. Wait, you can just shoot it from there.
No, here. That way he can get all of the movies.
What's going on?
Any other questions? This is Shyamasundara Prabhu's speciality, is doing strange things for Krishna that conquer people's hearts. Yes. Hari Hari.
Maharaj, in Golok Vrindavan, Krishna behaves... Krishna is just like an 18-year-old boy. He behaves just like an ordinary boy. He plays like ordinary boy, talks like ordinary boy. He don't show his opulence. In Vrindavan, there is a Maya which covers the knowledge that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and he is the father of everyone, and everyone is the eternal servant of Krishna. Then even after this, why the Vasis of Vrindavan, they are constantly eager to serve the Lord? They are completely surrendered to the Lord. They love so much with the Lord.
That is the nature of that supreme, all-inclusive prema or love.
They understand Krishna's supremacy better than anyone. But their love is so deep and so intimate that that his sweetness is so great that even though fully understanding his supremacy and his powers and his opulences, it becomes insignificant compared to his sweetness, his beauty, and his playful pastimes. That is the special feature of the love of the residents of Vrindavan. That's what Brahma has understood through this beautiful pastime. Because in Brahma Loka, when Brahma performs yajnas, Vishnu appears to receive his offerings. But even the opulences of Vishnu become insignificant in comparison to the sweetness of Krishna. And it's not that there's a competition, because he's the same person. Vishnu and Krishna are identical, one person. But as Krishna, he reveals his highest, deepest opulence of Madhurya Ras in Vrindavan. Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. This Hare Krishna mantra has descended not from Vaikuntha but from Goloka Vrindavan to bring us to that destination. So let us chant and be grateful and happy. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.